Hello, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Our guest again is Pastor Todd Pruitt, lead pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Harrisonburg. He'll be joining us in just a minute to continue our mini-series on some of life's big questions. But first, for those of you who may have missed our first program with Todd, here's a quick recap of that first program. We began with the amazing story of creation as told in the book of Genesis. Therefore, our first big question was very simple. Is that story fact or fiction? And why does it matter anyway? For example, might there be another explanation that leaves God entirely out of the creation picture? Is it possible to have a godless universe? But it doesn't end there. If we throw out the Genesis account of God's creation, don't we also cast doubt on the rest of the Bible, including its clear teaching about moral issues of right and wrong and the difference between what is good and what is evil? That's the challenge we face today, because if we do that, won't that inevitably lead to a confused culture and to chaos where there is no moral law and everyone does whatever is right in his or her own eyes? Well, that was part one. And the plot thickens today, because we'll be talking about the part in Genesis where God created man, male and female, in his own image, and why that matters in our culture today. This is going to be another great adventure with Pastor Todd Pruitt. Todd, welcome back to Crossroads. And let's begin by asking what led you to begin this series of sermons on life's big questions and about today's topic in particular, which is entitled, What Does It Mean to Be Human? And so the question is, was it because of trends that we are seeing in our culture today?
Yes, certainly. Typically, what I do is preach through books of the Bible, but we also have to be paying attention to what is going on and those places in Scripture that might be particularly applicable to answering some of the confusion that's going on at any given time. And so back in the fall, I was teaching our college and career Sunday school class at church, and we were talking about some of these very things. And at that point, some people that were in that class encouraged me to do some sermons on those very topics. And, you know, we live in a community with probably about 50,000 university students. I've never seen a time in my life where there's greater confusion, and I'm talking about among evangelicals, greater confusion about some of these very basic questions, like, for instance, what does it mean to be human? What are we? What does gender mean, if anything, etc.?
Well, Todd, when I picked up my sermon notes for the Sunday when you taught on this, I saw the first thing I noticed was a big picture of this thing that I vaguely remember from science classes as a double helix. Right. I think that's the way it was always described. Yeah. Is this a picture of DNA? Am I remembering that correctly? Yes. And explain why that is on my sermon notes.
Yes, yes. I every once in a while, I like to pull a picture out for the sermon notes that will get me some questions asked. But yes, this was a picture on the front of the sermon notes of the DNA, the double helix structure of the DNA, as if to kind of say that, you know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made right down to our microscopic structures, that what God has made us is encoded into every cell of our bodies.
Well, Todd, going back to the current trends that triggered this sermon, I think as you began your sermon, you also made a reference to this whole transgender bathroom issue that seems to have a lot of people confused.
Yeah, you know, it's a very strange thing when a letter goes out from the federal government, a joint letter from our departments of justice and education, authored by the highest legal position in the country, Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General of the United States, when it goes out to all of the public school systems in the country and saying, at this point, you know, it wasn't a do this, you know, you're legally bound to do this, but it was the first step in that, kind of a friendly letter saying, here's what you're going to be expected to do. And I don't know if everybody understands the weight of that letter and the specificities of that letter, but Loretta Lynch says, listen, you need to accommodate every person, regardless of where they are in the scale of gender, whatever they consider themselves to be, you have to consider this and make accommodation for them in your restrooms, your locker rooms, your sports teams, etc. And that if you don't, well, then there's possibly some consequences that are going to come about from that. And of course, we know already, since our federal government is very comfortable suing an entire state like the state of North Carolina, it will certainly bring suit against public schools that refuse these accommodations, which deny the reality of human gender.
Well, and that's difficult for school boards and superintendents to deal with because right. they rely heavily on the infusion of federal funds into their education system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the threat is real. And so school administrators are going to have to deal with this very carefully. Now, I think there's 11 states right now. That are saying we're not going to comply with this. I hope they hold strong. I hope other states join them. I'm not hopeful for our state, obviously. There needs to be some more courageous governors and states' attorneys general to do that.
Well, Todd, then just moving on from that, you said in your presentation that, and I quote, the divinely ordered male-female gender construct of humanity is vital for the health, happiness, and flourishing of men and of women. Mm-hmm. Now, that's pretty broad. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we notice in the creation account is that across the board, God has given to the animals this binary gender structure of male and female. He's given it to humanity. We even see it reflected in plant life. I mean, you learn that as a kid in physical science. And so there's a reason for this. God is not being arbitrary, but he has, in his wisdom and in his goodness, given this binary structure of gender so that there will be flourishing, so that there will be reproduction from everything from flowers to bumblebees, to ring-tailed lemurs, to human beings, that there will be reproduction and flourishing. And it's not just on the physical level, but one of the things we see is that there is this emotional complementarian reality that goes along with this binary gender structure as well, that again, works towards human happiness. When Adam saw the woman, he gives this almost doxological exclamation, "At last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." And so he sees that here is this one who is so much like him in so many ways. She is clearly not a part of the animal kingdom. She is clearly one of him, and yet complementary in clear ways as well. And again, this goes beyond just bodily structure, but we have thousands and thousands of years of human witness to the fact that this complementary structure between male and female has to do with our emotions and our minds. And of course, there's a spiritual reality to this as well. We are completed in each other by these complementary differences. And again, we've known this throughout human history, you know, until, you know, the day before yesterday. Suddenly right. Now we don't know it anymore.
Yeah.
I think we used to refer to this as the difference between Mars and Venus. And
sure,
I haven't heard
sure.
that lately, but that's
yes. So Todd, you're drawing on the Genesis account mm-hmm. of the creation of man and woman, and you've already brought up the points that we get from that account that man and women are gendered beings mm-hmm. and we're complementary beings. You also point out that we are reproductive beings and monogamous beings. Maybe mm-hmm. you could flesh those latter two out for us a bit.
It's been written recently, and I agree, by a number of different moral philosophers that we lost the battle for marriage, not just in the last few years, but decades ago, when the sexual revolution really got kicked up in the 1960s, and physical intimacy within marriage became effectively separated completely from the responsibility and the gift of childbearing. And what we mean by that is that physical intimacy now became solely about companionship. Now, it is about companionship because marriage is about companionship. It's not good for the man to be alone. So that's a central concern, this concern of emotional companionship and companionship. But the other central concern for marriage is childbearing. Now, we know we're in a fallen world. We know that there are heartbreaking things like barrenness. We know that it's a tragic situation. However, typically, marriage is still about childbearing. God gave the command, be fruitful and multiply. And that hasn't changed. Now, again, as I explained Sunday, I'm not embracing the full quiver movement, where unless you have 19 or 48 children, you're not being godly. Rather, I'm just saying that childbearing remains a central concern for marriage. And when we remove that, then we've lost the moral high ground for saying marriage must be between a man and a woman. If we make it only about companionship and sexual fulfillment, then what is to hinder, quote, you know, so-called same-sex marriage at that point? Well, marriage has to be about childbearing as well as companionship.
I thought that was a great point, and you referred to in the sermon the very excellent, extremely instructive book by Robert George, Ryan Anderson,
yes,
and Sharif Jeer, just called What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. And I would recommend that to
absolutely
everyone who's interested in the topic. But I thought it was such a great point that when we stray even just a little bit from what God tells us is His design from something, we go completely awry without maybe understanding that, you know, when we shift the focus and take that reproductive procreation purpose out of marriage, we've really done damage without anybody realizing it, I don't think, until recently. And so from an intellectual standpoint, I think, as you point out, it's really part of the problem we've had in trying to make an intellectually honest case,
right,
that marriage can only be a male-female relationship.
And it's interesting. I was talking to my sons about this just last night in the living room, and they are shocked that there are Christian people who are wavering on this or who have dismissed this altogether. They're shocked that Christians are increasingly influenced by the gender chaos and sexual chaos around us.
Can you address the point about our being created as monogamous beings?
Well, it's clearly the creation arrangement that God says a man will leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. It's always been the case from Adam and Eve that God created men and women to be monogamous in marriage. Now, some have asked me, well, what about, you know, David and Solomon? They had multiple wives. Well, first of all, they were never commanded to take multiple wives.
Right.
That they did is the fact that the Bible describes the fact that they did. The Bible's not saying, and this was a good thing. In fact, quite the opposite. It worked out very poorly for them because of that. Multiple marriage is never described positively in the Bible. In fact, the Bible shows us how disastrous it can be and how disastrous it was. You even look at Abraham's case when he tries to circumvent the arrangement of his one wife, and the sons of Ishmael have been a mess ever since then, haven't they? So we are created as monogamous beings. And you notice, even within the, you know, the created order reacts violently when we violate that arrangement. How many diseases, how many physical negative physical conditions do there have to be? How many lives lost around the world to diseases related to the violation of this single command? It's extraordinary. We're talking hundreds of millions of lives. You look at the AIDS crisis alone, sweeping across not just North America, but even more tragically, as far as numbers of lives, in Africa. The whole phenomenon of millions upon millions of AIDS orphans. At what point will humanity say it is the violation of this very command and this very created structure that has caused these things? Of course, we know it. We just won't say it.
We've had several programs on Crossroads regarding marriage, and we've had these 8P purposes of marriage that Rita has memorized and regurgitate on a
don't
moment's
quiz me
notice. But it began with partnership, that He created woman for man's partnership and as a helpmeet. But the second purpose, after this general idea of partnership, was procreation. And that is what really singularizes the relationship of marriage between one man and one woman, so that, as you're suggesting, we have made marriage not just about procreation, but about recreation.
Right.
It becomes playtime, and whoever, whenever, wherever is just fine. But let's shift the conversation a bit and talk about society's rejection of the teaching of God's word regarding male and female. When our society says that gender is a choice rather than a binary fact, what does that say about the spiritual condition of our culture, including the church, and our posture toward God?
Yeah, well, it's Romans 1 all over again. It's the denial of what is obviously true. And Paul tells us in Romans 1 that when you continually, habitually deny the clear truth, then God ultimately gives you over to a depraved mind to do what ought not be done. And so we're simply witnessing the judgment that is promised in Romans chapter 1. Again, all people know that there are two genders. All people know this. Right. It's undeniable. It is not only encoded in every cell of our body, it's in our structures, it's in our bodily functions. We all know this. But what's happened is that the leaders of the new sexual revolution have effectively separated gender from biology. And so we still have this category of sex being male and female, but that's only about your biology, which has now been very much diminished. What matters is now that gender has been freed from biology. It's about how you feel. Again, the category of gender identity is completely meaningless. There's no such thing as gender identity. There's gender. You know, identity was added as a means to further along this chaos of saying that you can be anywhere along a continuum that seems to be getting broader and broader by the day. And it's ruinous. It's ruinous intellectually. I mean, how are you going to teach biology now? What's the typical biology teacher going to do in high school now that male and female, those categories, which are undeniable throughout the biological sciences, what are you going to do now that has now become, in essence, hate speech to say that there's male and female? And we're going to have to rewrite textbooks. We're going to have to re-script biology teachers so as not to offend. It's going to be absolute chaos.
And Todd, wouldn't you say that at the heart of this is really an issue of just rebellion?
Yes.
And isn't it an example of mankind saying, you know, there is no God who can constrain me by deciding my gender. I will decide this for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It is the ultimate, what we're seeing in homosexuality and in the new gender chaos is direct rebellion. It's the ultimate assertion of the sovereign self to say, I will be my maker. God is not my maker. When God created them, male and female, he was showing forth his sovereignty, his good and wise sovereignty over his human creatures. But man does what man does. And if you go back to the fall in Genesis chapter 3, what's at the heart of the fall is this assertion to say, I'm going to be my moral authority. I'm going to be like God in the way that God didn't intend me to be like him, which is my own moral authority. And mankind has been doing it ever since. And this latest attack on gender is the most egregious example of that assertion of the sovereign self that I've seen in my lifetime, probably any of us have. Again, to assault something so fundamental, to deny something so obvious, and to see every government agency quickly get in line. It's been an extraordinary education in the power of the lie.
Yeah, I think it's incredible that it has gone to this extreme, that now these prominent members, leaders of our society, are rejecting something that is irrefutable as a matter of science, which is they have always been, you know, in their own minds, they are the champions of science.
And Christians are the anti-intellectuals.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I just wonder, you know, can this stand? Do you think they have finally pushed it too far?
I'm hoping they have. You know, for the sake of the good of believer and unbeliever. See, one of the reasons why we are, as Christians, reacting against this is not only for the glory of God, but also for the good of our neighbor. We love our neighbor. And sexual chaos and gender chaos is very bad for our neighbor, whether they are a believer or not. It's bad for them. Sexual chaos is bad. It's killing them, literally. And so we're for this, not just for political purposes. We're for this because we want to obey the two great commands, to love God and to love our neighbor. And this kind of chaos, this moral chaos, is very bad for them. And so when you have the president of the United States saying you're a bad citizen if you believe that there is male and female only, you're a bad citizen if you deny or seek to curve the sexual revolution, that's a bit of a frightening thing, because it's a very little leap from the president saying you're a bad citizen and legislation being enacted against Christians and churches. And we're already beginning to get inklings of that. Yeah. Bake this cake or else, right. For instance, you know. Exactly. So, yeah, so again, I want people to know that what generates our outrage on this is our concern for the glory of God and our concern for the welfare of his image bearers, whether they're believers or unbelievers. We love our neighbor, and this is bad for them.
I would add one more thing. We love our country. Sure. And our country is just going, we talked earlier about going down into the pit of confusion and chaos if we cannot understand this straight science of male and female. But there's another link, which is the sanctity of life. That also is a scientific fact, sure, that life begins in conception. So these two confusing arguments promoted by leaders of our culture and of our government are very disturbing. Mm-hmm.
You know, as the mother of two school-aged mm-hmm. children, I am thinking about the impact on them.
Right.
And I don't think it was, you know, any accident that our nation's schools, our nation's public mm-hmm. schools, are really the main target of this. And I'm just thinking about, you know, what it's like to be a middle school or even a high school-age kid. You're already confused. Right. You know, you're already trying to figure out yourself, your emotions, your peers. There's so much confusion already. And parents and educators have always had this important role to play in setting up healthy boundaries and helping to usher right. kids through this very already chaotic time. What are we doing to the kids when now we are saying that something that, you know, is as obvious and clear as a biological fact of gender is now a matter for you to decide based on your own feelings and desires? I can hardly fathom what we're doing to our kids.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And I would say that maybe the most insidious, actually even more specifically satanic features of the gender chaos is that it has targeted our children at times when they are so vulnerable. Again, children get confused. Yeah. And at particular times in their life, the chemical reactions going on in their body generate all kinds of chaos in their own minds and in their emotions. And that's one of the functions that parents have played. And as you've said, Rita, historically, schools partnering with parents have played. They've helped show how this kind of burgeoning, for instance, burgeoning masculinity within young boys is to be channeled in positive ways. It used to be that schools could pretty much be counted on to understand that. No more. And now you have voices of authority telling prepubescent and pubescent children who are naturally in a kind of physical and emotional chaos already, that whatever confusion they might feel, they need to follow and indulge, and it's harming, doing enormous harm, to the extent now where you have parents putting their children on hormone therapy because their boy feels like a girl or their girl feels like a boy. It is child abuse, and it's doing untold damage.
Yeah. From the time my kids were toddlers, one of the things I have consistently tried to instill in them is the idea that we don't make decisions based on our
right.
feelings or just our desires.
Right.
That is not a proper guide for how we're going to live our lives. And so to have the world saying exactly the opposite to them is really frustrating.
And to have the force of the federal government
yes.
behind that, threatening schools now, mm-hmm. get in line or else. Parents have some big decisions to make at this point.
Well, Todd, you alluded to this earlier, but why do you think it is so important for the transgender activists to force the rest of society to embrace this idea that gender is a matter of feelings and desires rather than of science?
Because they know it's not true. And if you know that you don't have the approval of God, then you will demand the approval of man. And that's why the sexual revolution will brook no dissent whatsoever. You know, people, it's quite obvious. They do not tolerate dissent. They don't want merely understanding. They demand that you celebrate what they're doing. And again, the reason is because they know that they do not have the approval of God. God's written his law on their hearts. And so when you know you don't have the approval of God, you will demand the approval of man.
I absolutely love C.S. Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man. Lewis explains that a person who denies objective truth and reality is ultimately left with nothing but human impulses and desires. He says, and I quote, "When all that says it is good has been debunked, what says I want remains," end quote. Is that where we are in society now?
Yeah, and again, to reference Lewis, you know, we're led by men without chests. Yeah. And so we are seeing leaders willingly, quickly give way to the pressure tactics of the new revolutionaries. And it's bad. It's bad for us in every way. And again, what they're doing is bad for our children. It's bad for our neighbors' children. And Christians ought to be the first ones to be saying this. If we love our neighbor, then we'd better get vocal about this.
Well, Todd, we're going to have to bring this to a close, but one final question. What do you say then to a person who is genuinely confused about his or her gender? Where is their hope? And for that matter, where's the hope for all of us?
Sure. You know, we want to point them to Christ. The fact is we live in a broken and fallen world, so people are going to be confused. And they're going to be confused more and more because of what's being told to them. So we're going to have people who are confused. We're going to have people with disordered sexual desires. And to them I say, welcome to the club. We all have disordered desires.
Right.
We all have disordered desires. To the one who has a disordered desire for revenge, what do we tell them? We tell them, you need help with that. Mm-hmm. You need to curb that. You need to get away from that. We want to tell the same thing to the person with a disordered sexual desire. We want to love them enough to say, there's hope for you. You may struggle with this for the rest of your days south of heaven. However, there's a Redeemer who forgives all of us with these disordered desires, and let us point you to that Redeemer.
I think we can just say amen to that, can't we, Rita?
Amen.
I think, Todd, you even got a round of applause after your sermon.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a crazy bunch at Covenant Presbyterian.
Well, thanks again, Todd, for being with us again in our search for answers to one of life's big questions. What does it mean to be human? Our guest has been Todd Pruitt, lead pastor at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Harrisonburg. You can go to the church's website at cov-pres.org if you want to listen to this entire series of Todd's sermons online, or even download the sermon outlines that he has prepared for each week. As I said earlier, you can also listen to this program again on our own website, valleyfamilyforum.org, and click the link to Crossroads on the homepage. As always, we are deeply grateful for your prayers, your encouragement, and your generous financial support. Listeners, we cannot do this without you. And if you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to P.O. Box 881 Harrisonburg, 22803. Thank you for being with us. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway and our engineer, Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another special time at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej